Coming up is the news.
Iran security forces arrest three people involved in a terrorist attack in the southwestern city of Egypt, which left six people dead. The U.S. announces sanctions against director of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting and head of IRIB World Service. And top U.S. military general says there is a low probability Ukraine could force Russia out of its entire territory, including the Crimean Peninsula. Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in at World News. Our top story, a senior judicial official says three people who are behind a brutal attack in southwestern Iranian province of Khuzestan have been arrested. Head of the Provincial Justice Department added a special operation is ongoing to identify and bring to justice others involved in the attack on the city of Izeh. His remarks came after unidentified gunmen opened fire on civilians and security forces in the city, leaving at least six people, including a child and elderly woman, dead. Terror attack also left a number of people injured. No group has yet claimed responsibility. The Iranian president, Ebrahim Raisi, has condoled with families of the victims, ordering security officials to identify and bring to justice all behind the attack. Raisi comes as the country has recently been hit by foreign-backed riots. Robert Fantina, journalist, says certain countries, including the U.S., incite riots in Iran in order to destabilize the country.
Well, this terrorist, we don't know, as you mentioned, who is responsible for this. However, we do know that outside forces, including the United States, have been instigating problems within Iran. And so even if this was not instigated by an outside force, it was certainly encouraged by them through the other activities that they're engaging in the country. Through these outside agitations, they're only making any organizations within Iran that are dissatisfied, they're giving them a permission, in a sense, to indulge in these awful terrorist activities. The United States obviously will do anything in its power to destabilize Iran. It hasn't succeeded yet, but it continues to try.
The U.S. Has announced more sanctions against Iran, now targeting officials and journalists associated with the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting, the IRIB. U.S. Treasury has targeted Director Peyman Jebeli and head of World Service Ahmad Norouzi, as well as several other reporters, managers, and employees. Measures include asset freezes of those on the sanctions list. Treasury has cited alleged human rights violations for its decision. Now, this is not the first time U.S. has come up with such measures against Iran's National Broadcasting Division. In 2013, the U.S. Treasury took similar actions over what it claimed then to be IRIB's involvement in Iranian government censorship activities. Journalist and political commentator Sayed Mohsen Abbas joined us earlier with his take on the story.
Soft power war, which the Americans and their partners have engaged in, is equally as powerful as the hard power of military intervention. In fact, I would go as far as to say that the soft power war is far more effective and powerful a tool in their eyes, and they continue to demand that kind of support for that division. I mean, and then the response of Press TV obviously gives them a huge problem. It's a huge problem for them that the Press TV truth counters the fake news that they invariably put out. So they terrorize nations through propaganda, through fake news, through false information, through entire campaigns. The Russians are victims of it at the moment. The Iranians have been for many, many years. But I think the Iranians have to stay steadfast. They have to take confidence and chalk this up as another victory, really, because if they're that scared of press TV, which they've limited in so many ways as it is, and are censoring it on virtually every platform that one knows here in the West, and yet they're still so terrified of it that they need to sanction it even more, then that, I think, in itself tells the story.
And staying with the West, anti-Iran measures the European Union imposed fresh sanctions on press TV Monday. Move prompted condemnation from head of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. Peyman Jebedi says it's not the first time the West has acted against its own claims of being defender of the freedom of expression. Jebedi reiterated that press TV is competing in an unequal arena compared to other networks which enjoy considerable support from the West. Says the latest sanctions indicate the EU is unable to tolerate press TV's minimal presence.
The European Union announced new sanctions on Iran. The bloc has blacklisted 29 officials and three organizations over what it called Tehran's widespread use of force against peaceful protesters. The sanctions include travel bans and asset freezes. Interior Minister Ahmad Vahidi, as well as several military and police officials, are on the sanctions list. In reaction to the sanctions, Iran's foreign ministry denounced the move as baseless, illegal, and meddlesome, stating that Tehran reserves the right to retaliate in kind. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said that addiction to sanctions has deprived European parties of rationality and tactfulness, warning that Europe itself is tightening the noose on its foreign relations by such a wrong-headed approach. One of the three blacklisted entities by the EU is Iran's press TV news channel. The 29-member bloc has accused the news channel of airing forced confessions of detainees during recent riots. Press TV's management has vehemently rejected the allegation, saying the news channel has made a great effort to counter fake narratives fostered by Western media. Press TV's CEO reacted to the blacklisting by calling it a failed offensive against Iran. In a tweet, he said Press TV gets sanctioned by EU because it tried to show there was no such thing as peaceful protests, but violent riots orchestrated by the West. The sanctions prove the offensive against Iran has failed miserably. Experts believe that the sanctions imposed on Press TV by the EU and earlier by the government of Canada are aimed at muzzling free speech and alternative views. They have also highlighted that human rights violations has turned into a tool for Western countries to advance their agenda, as street riots in Iran don't seem to be achieving the goals they expected. The EU had earlier imposed sanctions on 15 Iranian individuals and entities linked to Mahsa Amini's death. The move drew Tehran's strong condemnation. Iran denounced the blacklisting as futile and based on false allegations. Iran also announced tit-for-tat sanctions against institutions and individuals in the European Union last month due to their deliberate actions in support of terrorism and terrorist groups.
Press TV was established in 2007 to provide an alternative view and cover stories normally neglected by the Western media. However, EU sanctions against Press TV are not unprecedented. Since its establishment, the news channel has been targeted by the West several times.
The EU has blacklisted Press TV, but this is not the first time Press TV has been targeted by the West. Facebook and YouTube have taken down Press TV's pages several times while the US shut down the website of the news channel. The news network has also been removed from TV broadcasting satellites in Europe, North America, and East Asia, largely due to the pressure from the US and some of its allies. But why? Press TV first went on air in 2007 as Iran's only English-language news network. It works based on the motto of the voice of the voiceless and tries to cover stories that mainstream media usually boycott or underreport. A case point is the Israel-Palestine issue. Many experts say such moves are against freedom of expression. But isn't freedom of expression one of the pillars of the West's so-called democracy, or is it just a sham phrase to be used whenever it suits them? Press TV has long been used to face hurdles in its efforts to give a voice to the voiceless. All these obstructions only make one wonder if the declaration of support for free speech is anything more than a slogan.
And Iranian tanker ship seized by Greece at the behest of the U.S. 6 months ago has been released following a recent agreement between Tehran and Athens that, according to Iran's foreign ministry, the ministry added the statement that, Iran, in return that his pardon, had released two Greek ships, which were also seized in the Persian Gulf over legal matters around the same time. It added that all three ships today moved toward their destinations. Now, Greece has also confirmed the release of its tankers following months-long negotiations with Tehran. Row began in April after Athens seized a Russian-flagged tanker carrying Iranian crude. Greece said the move was part of EU sanctions on Russia due to the Ukraine war. Iran strongly protested the decision, calling it robbery. Top U.S. general says there is a low probability that Ukraine's military could force Russia out of the entire Ukrainian territory, including Crimea. Mark Milley, however, noted it is possible to find a political solution to the Ukraine war and make Russia withdraw. He added the U.S. will support Ukraine in defending itself for as long as it takes. Milley warned the Russian military is still capable of pulling more men into its ranks despite substantial losses that it suffered. Out of all Western backers for Kiev, the U.S. has so far provided the highest amount of military assistance. NATO Secretary General says there is no indication of a deliberate attack on Poland after a projectile landing in one of the villages near the border with Ukraine left two people dead. After a meeting with the military alliance's ambassador, Stoltenberg said the preliminary analysis suggests that it was likely caused by Ukrainian missiles launched to intercept a Russian attack. The Ukrainian president, however, was quick to put the blame on the Kremlin, saying the blast was an attempt of Moscow to spread terror. The Polish president, who also earlier echoed Kiev's views, ruled out an attack by Moscow in a fresh address to the National Security Council.
It was probably an S-300 rocket made in the Soviet Union, an old rocket, and there is no evidence that it was launched by the Russian side. It is highly probable that it was fired by Ukrainian anti-aircraft defense and unfortunately fell on our territory.
Also earlier, the U.S. President Joe Biden said the projectile was unlikely to have been fired by Moscow itself, ruling out Russia's involvement in the incident. Meanwhile, a statement by the Russian Defense Ministry says images from the wreckage show fragments of Ukraine's anti-aircraft missiles. The ministry said the Moscow's nearest strike on Ukraine has been at least 35 kilometers from the Polish border. Former U.S. President Donald Trump has announced his candidacy for the White House in the 2024 U.S. election. He announced his bid amid legal troubles he's been facing over a host of issues, including the deadly Capitol riots after his defeat in the last presidential race. We shared this and more with our guests in our news review program.
It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. Former U.S. President Donald Trump is once again back in the race for the White House in the 2024 elections. During his speech, Donald Trump also vowed to prevent President Joe Biden from becoming president for a second term. In the midterm elections last week, the Republicans failed to obtain the anticipated red wave of victories. They failed to win the Senate, but are still on track to win control of the House. Colin Campbell, a correspondent from Washington, D.C., joins us. We also have Robert Patillo, who's a political activist and attorney, joining us also from Washington, D.C. Welcome to you both. So, Colin, first over to you. Give us an idea of how this news was received. Not that it was not anticipated, but what do Americans feel about this?
Well, of course, as you would have guessed, Americans are pretty divided on this, and even those from Trump's Republican Party. There is already an emerging person or an emerging candidate, Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, who was just reelected and is someone who a lot of Republicans are looking to take their party to a different level past where the former president took Republicans. We recognize that this is going to be a pretty different election cycle. You have a current president who says he plans to run again, but a lot of people feel that he may be too old to run again. Then you have a previous president who's running for a third time. At the same time, you have a divided America, a divided Congress, where it looks like Republicans may be running the House, Senate, Democrats will be running the Senate. And even within the Republican Party, there's a division on which direction the Republican Party wants to go. So there are a lot of dynamics here. And some people are wondering whether or not this was the best move for the former president to announce his candidacy, especially when there's so much tumult happening now. But at the same time, the former president may see an opportunity here. He sees that there may be some weakness in the Democratic Party. He sees that there may be some weaknesses in the Republican Party. And he still has a very loyal fan base. We have to remember, the former president received more than 70 million votes for him to be president again. That's not a very small number. So there's still many Americans who are looking for leadership from the former president, and it looks like he wants to capitalize on some of the weaknesses he sees in both parties to announce his candidacy and to hopefully for him become president once again.
And how much, Robert Petillo, does the fact that Joe Biden is his age work against him, even though people may not like Trump, but they want the Democrats, but not the face of Joe Biden?
Well, I think that oddly President Trump running kind of takes that issue off the table. President Biden is 80, but former President Trump is 76 years old. So he's not exactly the young breath of fresh air that America is looking for. And I think many Americans who are voting generationally, what we saw in the exit polls from the midterms is that Generation Z voters, young voters, voted for Biden and the Democrats at a rate of 70%+. We saw millennial voters, those who are, about 30 to 40 years old, voting for Democrats at over 60%. So the idea that President Biden's age will somehow take away, I don't think that's been borne out by his policies. But what we are seeing, however, is that President Trump's base, being significantly older, whiter individuals, have been dying out in recent years. And without the ability to garner support from Latinos, from Middle Easterners, from Muslims, from African Americans, from Asians, from young people, the vote share that Republicans are getting continues to decrease because they simply have policies from a bygone era. And so the idea of going backwards to Trump is unappealing to many in the Republican establishment because they see the need to move forward. Americans vote forward, not backwards. They see a second nomination of President Trump as being a step backwards.
Okay, thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Robert Petillo, political activist and attorney from Washington, D.C., and Colin Campbell reporting there from Washington, D.C. Thank you to you both. And that does for this edition of the News Review. Thanks for tuning in.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. The widespread criticism of the Republican media against former President Donald Trump and other senior GOP leaders shows the results of U.S. midterm elections were not favorable to the Republicans. The results have not only surprised Republicans but also infuriated them, with many pundits and experts expecting a Republican red wave which never materialized. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Fox News Channel has covered this story. The former New York governor, George Pataki, has said on Sunday, 13th of November, former U.S. President Donald Trump is tearing apart the Republican Party after the GOP failed to take control of both houses of Congress. Following the midterm elections on 8th of November, the GOP failed to win control of the Senate and underperformed in races across the country. It appears the Democrats would control the Senate and Republicans would win the House of Representatives. George Pataki said, "The problem is Donald Trump. The sooner he goes away, the quicker we will have the new Republican Party." Pataki, who served as governor of New York from 1995 to 2006, added, "He's had his time and now he's tearing apart the Republican Party since the election." Republicans were expected to take control of the United States House of Representatives and had a good shot at a Senate majority heading into the election day as President Joe Biden struggled with low approval ratings ahead of recent elections, partly due to public frustration over high inflation. But according to mainstream U.S. media, Democrats outperformed expectations and on Saturday, 12th of November, captured the Senate majority. The Democrats are likely to control the Senate as they have for the past 2 years, with 50 of its 100 seats, since Vice President Kamala Harris will hold a tie-breaking vote. Senior GOP senators blamed midterm election losses on Republican candidates aligned with Donald Trump, saying those candidates underperformed on election day. However, Donald Trump on Sunday, 13th of November, blamed Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell for the disappointing Republican performance. George Pataki on Sunday said, "When we talk about Donald Trump, we lose," saying the party followed him off a cliff in 2018 and they'd followed him to a loss to Joe Biden, of all people, in 2020. George Pataki said Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who won his re-election on Tuesday, 8th of November, and other rising stars within the Republican Party should now take center stage. The former New York governor said, "There are other good candidates, but the point being, if we look forward, we're going to win." He added, "If we look backward with Donald Trump, we're going to lose again." Republicans remain close to winning the House of Representatives and officials continued counting ballots. It could take several days or more before the outcome of enough House races is known to determine which party will control the 435-seat chamber. As of Monday, 14th of November, Republicans had won 212 seats, with 218 needed for a majority, ahead of Democrats with 205 seats. The Hill newspaper has also covered the same story. Republican Senator Bill Cassidy has put the blame of midterm election losses on Republican candidates aligned with former President Donald Trump, saying those candidates underperformed on Election Day. Following Tuesday, 8th of November's midterm elections, the junior U.S. Senator from Louisiana said on Sunday, 13th of November, "The Republican Party needs to explain to the American people where we think the party should go in the future." GOP Senator Bill Cassidy stated, "Republican candidates who were talking about the future and who had managed their states well, they overperformed. The American people want ideas, they want a future." Bill Cassidy said he was looking at the 2022 midterm elections empirically when he said Trump-endorsed candidates underperformed. The senator said, "Those closely aligned with the past, those are the ones that underperformed. We as a party need to have a debate about ideas. In that debate, we need to explain to the American people exactly where we think our country should go." Senate Republicans are worried that Donald Trump may derail the GOP party's chances of winning the runoff election in Georgia next month by either casting doubt on the legitimacy of the midterm elections or announcing his plan for the 2024 presidential election. The Wall Street Journal has also covered the same story. Former U.S. President Donald Trump is under fire from within the GOP after the recent elections turned into a complete disappointment for the Republican Party. Florida Senator Rick Scott said on Friday, 11th of November, that the 2022 midterm elections were a complete disappointment for Republicans, lamenting low voter turnout on election day. Rick Scott said, "Here's what happened to us. Election day, our voters didn't show up. We didn't get enough voters. It was a complete disappointment." He said the Republicans, who were expected to make significant gains in the midterm elections, lacked a positive political message to prompt GOP voters to show up at the polls. Rick Scott said, "I think we've got to reflect now. What didn't happen?" Adding, "I think we didn't have enough of a positive message. We said everything about how bad the Biden agenda was. It's bad. The Democrats are radical, but we have to have a plan of what we stand for." In the meantime, Donald Trump was seen as largely to blame for the Republicans' disappointing performance in Tuesday, 8th of November's vote. GOP allies criticized him on social media and cable news networks, questioning whether he should continue as the party's leader and pointing to his toxic political message as the common thread woven through three consecutive lackluster election cycles. David Urban, a longtime Donald Trump advisor, said in an interview, "Republicans have followed Donald Trump off the side of a cliff." Former Representative Peter King, a Republican from Long Island who has long supported Donald Trump, said, "I strongly believe he should no longer be the face of the Republican Party," adding that the Republican Party can become a personality cult. Kayleigh McEnany, a former Trump White House press secretary and one of his longtime defenders, said on Wednesday, 9th of November, that Donald Trump should hold off on making any announcements until the Senate elections is completed, pending the runoff election in Georgia in December. Kayleigh McEnany insisted, "He needs to put it on pause, absolutely. If I'm advising any contender, no one announces 2024 until we get through 6th of December." The U.S. Republican Party, which had been expected to make significant gains in this year's midterm elections, lost its grip on the Senate majority. Democrats celebrated their victory in the upper chamber on Sunday, as the fate of the House of Representatives still remained uncertain. Maryland Governor Larry Hogan said, "It's basically the third election in a row that Donald Trump has cost us the race."
Food for thought.
Salam, and let us ponder upon a beautiful statement from the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him. "Beware of the flight of blessings, for nothing that runs away is returned."
Thank you.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the peak of desires and extreme limit of aspirations. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to this show, everyone. You're listening to A to Z program. Now, in today's program, we're talking about the peak of desires in a human being and the extreme limit of aspirations. A man's innate desires extends to infinity. There's no limit or boundary to any of these desires. They do not require restriction or even halt at a particular level. On the contrary, they all lead man to the ultimate point and making him having boundless desires. Now, having boundless desires is verily one of the characteristics of man or of a human being. Temporary and limited access does not content man. Even the non-religious philosophers do not deny man's innate desires. Rather, this is regarded as one of the most important principal differences of man and animals. Russell has noted as below, One of the most important principal differences of man and animals is that human desires, as opposed to those of animals, are boundless and cannot be fully materialized. There's no way they can be, you know, fixed. There's no way they can be fully materialized. Although these wishes are variegated, they are all finally brought together, and their ultimate satisfaction is summed up in one thing: relationship with the infinite source of knowledge, power, beauty, and perfection. It is the future of the states of being that the more severe and the more powerful and perfect they become, the more they incline towards unity and extension.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to A to Z program. We're talking about the peak of desires and the extreme limit of aspirations in a man. Human faculties, which are dispersed when belonging to the body, are united when attached to the soul. While possessed of unity and extension, the soul embraces all human powers. In like manner, the extreme point of each of the innate desires, which extends to infinity and which is then united with other desires, is in fact one ultimate desire perceived from various viewpoints and angles, and that is dependence on a perfect infinite being. That is to say, proximity to the Almighty Allah in such a state makes a man realize his complete relationship with the Creator. He sees himself dependent on and linked to Him, or rather, he sees himself as the incarnation of dependence on and relationship with Him. Before His presence, man observes no independence for himself. In this state, he sees all objects dependent on the Holy Divine Being and acquires speculative knowledge of the realities of existence. On the basis of his own existential involvement, he reaps benefit from rays of divine grandeur and beauty. The man's innate desire to recognize the realities of existence is materialized. Now, in this state, man finds a way to the source of infinite power. By being related to this source, man obtains the power to perform whatever he wills and wishes.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Iran is the land of saffron, and the red gold has earned the country a fortune throughout the centuries. Now, Iran's city of Torbat Haydariya has hosted a saffron photography festival as a means to introduce the lucrative product to the world. Yusuf Jalali reports.
Like gold, it is weighed in shekels, not in kilos, and that's why saffron is called the red gold, reflecting how precious it is economically. Torbat Haydariya in northeast Iran is the hub of saffron cultivation in the country, producing an average of 20 million tons of the crop each year. Now the city hosts the Festival of Saffron Photography every year to introduce Iran as the land of saffron and how these hard-working farmers produce the strategic crop.
Photographers present in this festival should use their artistry to shed light on different stages of saffron harvest all the way to the final product. Everyone knows Iranian saffron, but perhaps few know how it's produced. So this festival highlights this issue using photography.
Photography is a universal language that needs no translation, so their photos can better introduce this strategic plant to the world from unique angles.
This year, Iran exported roughly 300 tons of saffron, generating more than $350 million in income, according to the data provided by the Ministry of Agriculture. Experts believe Iran could have a much higher share of the global trade of saffron if it pays better attention to branding and marketing of the product.
Due to favorable weather conditions, Iranian saffron is unique in the world, but unfortunately, in many countries, it's smuggled in bulk and is packaged under foreign brands and then sold at higher prices. If we can brand it inside Iran, then we can export it more efficiently.
The young farm owner says his saffron is exported to Europe and the Middle East, despite the restrictions caused by U.S. sanctions on Iran. But more than the U.S. measures, he's concerned about the impact of climate change on saffron cultivation, warning of what he calls saffron immigration from his city, if authorities remain idle.
Unfortunately, saffron is gradually leaving our region and moving to western parts of Iran. This is due to changes in weather conditions and declining rainfall here. If the government helps farmers with modification of planting patterns, we can stop this disaster.
Over the past 2 years, Iran has expanded its cultivation area for saffron to 115,000 hectares, nearly 20 times more than the entire worldwide land dedicated to the crop. While the Iranian red gold is mainly cultivated in the northeastern Khorasan province, other parts of the country, including Khuzestan and Chaharmahal Bakhtiari, are also fertile for saffron farming.
For centuries, saffron has been a key word in Iran's economy, and still is today. Now, Saffron Photography Festival says many know Iran by its red gold, but through the photos shot here, they will get a glimpse of the mesmerizing saffron farms in Iran and how this amazing crop is produced. Yusuf Jalali from the saffron farms in the suburbs of Turbat Haydariye.
Chinese aerobatic teams have been performing jaw-dropping stunts to mark the 73rd anniversary of the People's Liberation Army Air Force. Pilots wowed the audience with their complicated maneuvers, such as swooping close to the ground, making loops and rolls. Aerobatic teams use red, yellow and blue smoke trails representing the flag of the Chinese Air Force. The Hongying aerobatic team, also known as the Red Eagle, is made up of 10 JL-8 trainer planes and 20 pilots from the Air Force Aviation University. The performance was part of China's International Aviation and Aerospace exhibition held in southern China. The exhibit typically draws thousands of participants in the field of aviation from countries all over the world.
Iran has unveiled the new jersey for its national football team for the upcoming 2022 FIFA World Cup in Qatar. The new sports attire was showcased during a special ceremony in the capital, Tehran. The event was attended by some of the biggest names in Iran's soccer federation and included a series of entertaining performances. One objective of the ceremony was to see off the national soccer team, who will be making the trip to Qatar in less than a week. The jersey has been created by an Iranian sportswear designer who designed official jerseys for several Iranian sports teams taking part in international competitions. The heavily anticipated World Cup tournament will kick off on the 20th of November. Usually, rats are associated with garbage and disease, but these rats are not the typical rodents. They are being trained in Tanzania for search and rescue operations. These are a breed called the African giant pouch rat, which is naturally a very curious creature. It can weigh up to around 1,500 grams and are known to have longer lifespans than other rats. Lead researcher at the Belgium-based non-profit company Apopo, Donna Keen, says this species can live up to 10 years. This means that even after the 9 months of training, the rat will still have a long working career ahead. The size and agility of rats make them invaluable for search and rescue efforts.
So this is where the idea for the rats came in, because the rats are just as trainable as dogs. They've got a great sense of smell, and their small size and natural agility should hopefully make them really good in this scenario, where they could squeeze in small spaces and get closer to any victims.
The rescue rats began training in August last year at the Apopo's Training and Research Center. The rodents are fitted with tiny backpacks that enable real-time wireless audio-visual communication. When they find a potential victim, they pull a small handle hanging around their neck to let the rescue handlers know. The rats were trained to locate humans in mock disaster zones, such as aftermath of earthquakes. Apopo has already trained rats to detect landmines and sniff out tuberculosis.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
So much joy can be found in a bottle of luxury perfume, but parting with hundreds of dollars for such scents, I can take the shine off that experience. Now in Syria, a perfumer is helping people smell expensive without digging too deep into their pockets. One whiff of a fragrance is all a Syrian perfumer needs to recreate the scents of luxury brands for a fraction of a cost. That's very welcome in a country ravaged by years of foreign-backed militancy. Dozens of customers flock daily to his tiny store nestled in the historic bazaar of Damascus. They flash photos on their phones of high-end perfumes they want to replicate. He says all he has is his nose.
Here lies the secret of the profession and the brain power. I started training my nose to smell perfumes since I was 15 years old. I do not own high-end equipment. All I have is my nose, my brain power and expertise. That's all.
In the war-torn country, many people struggle to afford life's bare necessities, let alone perfume. With the local currency losing much of its value, Syrian employees reportedly make roughly $25 a month, on average a quarter of the price of a bottle of imported perfume. This perfumer sells his fragrances for about $6, drawing in a flow of clients from all walks of life. Some people believe the internet will soon make paper books a thing of the past. In Iraq, book lovers are fighting back. They have launched a book festival offering thousands of free books to encourage the Arab nation to read more. The festival is called Iraq Reads. It's attracted big crowds. Iraqis stood shoulder to shoulder behind long tables covered in books and flipped through hundreds of titles to find the one catching their interest. Some others gather on next to the stands to read under a tree, chat about their newest books, or listen to extracts of literature read aloud through a loudspeaker. One of the organizers says they aim to revive the culture of reading books, reading paper books.
It's a crisis all over the world, not only in Iraq. There is a crisis in terms of reading paper books. One of the goals for our festival is to revive the reading of paper books so that the electronic book does not become an alternative of the paper book.
As part of the festival, 70,000 books have been distributed for free across the country so far. The books covering a wide range of topics were donated by partner libraries. The festival is held in 7 provinces in the Arab country. You have probably seen penny farthings in old books and cartoons, the antique bicycle with one very large and one small wheel. Now, this peculiar bike actually brings fans together in Prague each year to show off their skills. The cyclists were all dressed in historical costumes as they rode in formation at Letno Park in Prague. The traditional one-mile race competition was also held to see who could go the fastest while keeping their balance. The riders, mostly elderly men, said they came there for just the fun of it. Penny farthings were invented around 1870 and were popular until models with two evenly sized wheels and chains were developed. Most bicycles today are based on this design. Egypt is marking 100 years since the discovery of the tomb of Tutankhamun, a pharaoh who ruled more than 1,300 years B.C.
I was fascinated with the story myself, and every morning in which I was here to pick up our inspector when I was working on a dig in the Valley of the Kings, I would wander around the house trying to imagine what it was like if I had been here in 1922 and could have been a part of that. And now here we are, now that it's restored. I do hope that this will turn into a center of cultural interest for anyone and everyone who wants to visit Egypt and wants to hear more of the story about Howard Carter and the king.
In 1922, British Egyptologist Howard Carter and his team discovered Tutankhamun's nearly intact tomb. That was the start of what became a 10-year project to excavate and conserve more than 5,000 unique artifacts. Tutankhamun's reign lasted barely 9 years in the vast span of ancient Egyptian history. Although his successors tried to erase the king's record from history, the valuable discovery of his tomb has immortalized the boy king.
China is taking the final step in the construction of its Tiangong space station, the second permanently inhabited station in low Earth orbit after NASA's International Space Station. The second and last lab component of the station was launched on Monday. The uncrewed module is called Mengtian, which means dreaming of the heavens. The rocket carrying it blasted off from China's Space Launch Center on the coast of the southern island province of Hainan. The 23-ton Mengtian is an advanced lab and does not have space for sleeping and sanitation. Instead, it has more space to carry payloads for scientific studies. Fan Ping is the chief designer of the project. She says this is a special step towards space research.
I think the Mengtian lab module is quite special, as it is for experiment only, which can be seen as a dedicated studio. There are 13 scientific experiment racks in the module and 37 exposed loading stations outside the module, enabling astronauts to do more extravehicular loading experiments in the future.
The Mengtian module is the last building block of the T-shaped Tiangong station. It has to fly 400 kilometers to join the two-module combination already dispatched into space. Together, the three modules will construct the station, which is designed for a lifespan of at least 10 years.
Music.
have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
In Britain, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has backed his close ally Dominic Raab in relation to a series of claims that Raab mistreated civil servants. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Sun has more for us. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has backed his close ally Dominic Raab after he faced a series of claims he mistreated civil servants. The Deputy Prime Minister Dominic Raab is under pressure after it emerged that staff within the Ministry of Justice were offered a route out of the department when he was reinstated. Mr. Raab was also forced to defend himself after insiders claimed he angrily threw tomatoes from a pret-a-manger salad across a meeting room, as he wasn't pleased with the way he was being briefed. However, Rishi Sunak said, "I don't recognise that characterisation of Dominic, and I'm not aware of any formal complaints about him." Of course, there are established procedures for civil servants if they want to bring to light any issues. I'm not aware of any formal complaint about Dominic. Mr. Raab will be in full glare of the public spotlight this week as he steps in for Rishi Sunak at Wednesday's Prime Minister's Question Time. He's expected to face off against Angela Rayner in the House of Commons showdown. Civil servants had described his behaviour during a previous stint in the department as demeaning, rude, and one person even branded him a bully. Justice Secretary Mr. Raab was even nicknamed the incinerator as he burns through staff so quickly. The comments come as 8 people coming in Mr. Raab's office while he was Foreign Secretary claimed to have been bullied or harassed at work, according to a leaked survey. The poll, which was carried out in late 2019, also revealed that 15 staff members reported witnessing another person being bullied or treated unfairly. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak added, "My understanding is that these surveys are annual and relate to the overall work environment and not to individuals. Tory MPs have defended Dominic Raab in recent days, including Eddie Hughes, who said he was hardworking and expected high standards from others.